America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Spiegel and Holmes.
First of all, congratulations. You know, it's nice to have a couple new faces at the score. And no, I'm just kidding.
Afternoons on the score.
It's also really difficult to assess when you think about the way Wrigley Field played this year. Just the run scoring environment in general in Wrigley was very low. And that's something we have to look into a lot. The challenge with that is that it's the weather.
The weather. That's what Jed Hoyer has been saying about the challenges of Wrigley Field. He's made a lot of interesting choices lately.
Jed said all that stuff about the weather at the end of year press conference. This week offers us a chance to hear from Jed again, and we will. It's Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score. And we'll listen to Jed talk about Cody Bellinger opting back in, and we'll listen to him talk about the offense and what he liked about it, but and such in a minute or two. But I know you wanted to comment on a big piece that was in The Athletic, where Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney collaborated as they often do on what is seemingly a pivot, or at least a bit more of a push within the Cubs organization for data, for research and development, for analytical models as guidelines for moves. And that move is away from certain amounts of human scouting. And they've gotten rid of some scouts, and they are joining some teams around the league in not sending scouts, specifically, Lawrence, to the high AAA levels and the minor, the major league levels, because they believe that they've seen enough, having scouted them earlier on in the process, and now having so much access to technology at a lot of these spots. And all AAA stadiums are outfitted with the same exact tech, pretty much, that teams can access and use. And major league stadiums have the same tech that they can access and use. For instance, they didn't go to Tampa or send scouts to Tampa to check out Isak Paredes. They felt like they knew Isak Paredes well enough. And I certainly am troubled by a couple things that you can miss in that regard, but I know you've been itching to talk about it, so give it to us.
I mean, look, I want to hear your perspective on this, because my reaction to it was, what? Like, I get that you want to try and streamline things, and it feels like it's a cost-cutting measure, which really bothers me. And when you start taking away some of that human element, it also allows you to act like, well, this is what the algorithm taught us. Like, I don't like the precedent that it sets and what it allows for specifically this particular Cubs front office. I think this particular Cubs front office has been trying to sell the Cub fan that they are trying to do all of this stuff in the margins. And this feels like the total, like, it's them completing that mission of, well, look at us, like, we're so hip, we don't even need actual people to do the scouting. And because of the lack of people doing the scouting, it makes me worry about accountability. in that regard, too, of if you're just putting it on the eyes of the people that are watching the videos, there's just so much that you can miss about a player. And I don't, if I'm them, I wouldn't be holding up the parade ace thing as a victory. Like, I wouldn't, if I'm them, I wouldn't be like, well, we totally didn't scout Paredes. Maybe you should have.
Well, Paredes had a rough time for part of it here, and the belief is that with a full offseason and a full spring training as a member of the org and having some personal comfort and getting to know a few more people, that it'll make a difference. So yeah, that's not one necessarily to hold up just yet, but he's a good player and a really solid bat. And we'll see what he does next year. But in terms of the overall, yeah, man, it's scary. It's scary. I don't like this idea that by the time somebody gets to AAA or in the majors as a part-time player, that they're fully formed as a person.
Correct.
I don't like that at all, because people can react to prosperity, to being told to wait at AAA when they think they're ready, in a way that reflects on them as a human. I'm thinking very specifically of a player that I heard a lot about in the minors from a minor league broadcaster. And I heard that this, you know, potential superstar was just somebody who didn't really give a crap on the daily level. Like, it was just waiting to be called up. And he has been in the majors. He's been in the majors. And if you're watching his career so far, you see some moments where you're like, oh man, that dude doesn't seem to be getting the most out of what he has right now, but maybe he still will. And maybe he still will. But if you showcase some of that stuff at AAA, I mean, maybe the Cubs think they knew stuff like this about that particular player before he reached to AAA. Maybe they think that they can learn that stuff before. But man, you got to find out if dudes are bad teammates. You got to find out if dudes don't care on the daily. And you got to watch them go through their work habits. I mean, if something gets screwed up, do they have teammates that come over and talk to them about it? Or have they ostracized their teammates already to the point that they get left alone on the bench? I mean, those kind of things matter, as well as watching, you know, the work habits where the cameras don't catch. So it's a tricky thing, because here's the deal. Nobody leans into the analytical models and the R&D more than the Dodgers. They have the biggest analytics department in baseball, but they also send scouts to everything. They don't skimp on that part of it at all. The Dodgers send scouts to everything. The Yankees send scouts to everything. The Rays send scouts to everything. The Astros send scouts everywhere and have not skimped on that in terms of the major league, the high minors level. Some other teams have. Cleveland has. Cleveland just went to the ALCS and had a very good year. Carter comes from Cleveland. It definitely feels like they're willing and trying to be Cleveland and perhaps Milwaukee without some of the human touch that has never left the Rays and, of course, the Dodgers and the Yankees.
Let me share a couple paragraphs with people just so they can be up to speed on this. And this is from Sahadev Sharma, who wrote this in The Athletic. The Cubs are actively interviewing prospective candidates and looking for new talent in spaces such as R&D and player development, on top of the investments and the hires already made in their effort to find and develop international talent. However, while some areas have seen growth, others are being scaled back as a result of the Cubs' shifting emphasis in the amateur scouting department. One high-level scout was laid off while two others left the organization and weren't replaced. In player development, the Cubs axed a group of five senior staffers who had combined for roughly 200 years of experience in professional baseball. The biggest change has come in the Cubs' pro scouting department, which has been drastically reduced. In pursuit of what Hoyer has dubbed the next great Cubs team, most of these recalibrations amount to leaning further into a rational, emotionless strategy that relies on an analytics-based model to evaluate players. It's a model-based approach that the Cubs have drifted towards in the aftermath of 2016.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and some of that is a little scary. You know, they're still going to have college scouts. They're still going to like think about that stuff when it comes to the draft. Cause the story I always think of is Stan Zielinski, the college scout, genuinely jumping on the table and saying that Kyle Schwarber is Babe effing Ruth. He's the one who said it. And then they were like, oh, well, this guy really thinks so. And then they looked at everything, but they really took his opinion to heart and started to believe it. And now at this late point in his career, every team that Kyle Schwarber is on praises him as a human and being a massively important part of good teams, not just because he crushes baseballs, but because of who he is as a human. That stuff matters.
But the crushing of baseball also matters.
Yeah,
like the fact that you can pencil him in for 40 home runs a year, that matters too.
Yeah.
And so like it's, I just feel like this current front office of the Cubs is trying to be too cute by half in everything that they do. Like they're so desperate to be ahead of the curve that they end up falling behind it and then chasing it. And that's what they're doing here. I hate that they don't. I would prefer that they act more like the high revenue generating teams in Major League Baseball. And they seem fixated on, what if we were the Rays? Well, what if you were the Rays and spent money? You'd be the Dodgers and you'd win a World Series. That's what bothers me. That everything is, well, we got this new thing that we're going to try doing. And
I think I hear you. I think what they're going to try to do is be Cleveland, but spend money. And by spending money, I don't mean to the Dodgers and Yankees and Mets stratospheric levels. They're going to try to be Cleveland and also spend money like they spent on Dansby Swanson, and they're going to spend on a pitcher. I think they're going to get a big starting pitcher for more than $100 million this coming offseason. They're not going to, I don't think they're going to get an offensive player like that unless they make a big time trade. But if they make themselves more like Cleveland, but also spend up towards, you know, 200 mil, 210, 220, 230, go over the tax every once in a while, I could see where that can work. But they're not going to be the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Mets.
They've declared. You still need to find the right guys to do that. And I am not convinced that this version of a Cubs front office can do that. And I think it's partially because, like, the idea of, well, let's get 5-4 win players, and that'll equal what we would get if we had like a Juan Soto. But they don't seem to value the idea of, if you have a 6 or 7 WAR player and he's only eating up one position, that puts you in a better position to be successful, and it allows for there to be some regression by your 4-win players that puts you in a bind over the last 2 seasons where those guys got close to their numbers at the end of it, but even at their maximum, at their 90%, as Jed is wont to say, they still ended up with you being a team that only won 83 games, and that's not good enough, and it shouldn't be good enough.
We're going to have a lot of time this offseason, and I look forward to it, talking about, you know, how you build a team and what that philosophy is and a lot of the specifics. They're clearly counting on PCA to be a hopeful real contributor from moment one. They're counting on Paredes with that full off season in spring to be comfortable, counting on the Dansby that you saw in the second half of the year. And I think Seiya Suzuki as your full-time DH, as Cody Bellinger has opted in and is going to play a lot of right field. And that means your outfield defense is going to be great. Let's listen to Jed Hoyer, who talked at the GM meetings about the offense in the second half, and see if you hear the weather reference.
Most of this gives us clarity. I think now we know what our roster looks like, and now we can go about building the team. So I think before that, there was some uncertainty, and now it adds clarity. And spend the next 4 days talking to teams and talking to agents and getting a feel for the market.
Assuming the roster is what it is right now, he's clearly your best defensive right fielder, probably. Have you had a conversation with Seiya that he would mostly be the DH like the end of the season? Where are you with that?
Yeah, it feels premature on that. But yeah, I thought Seiya did a great job when he was DHing. We didn't have injuries down the stretch, but you know, I think anytime you just have depth at a bunch of positions, you know, you lose an outfielder, and all of a sudden having the ability to slot a guy like that in is really nice. But you know, Seiya had a great year. I think he was top 10 in the National League in OPS. obviously Cody's our best defensive right fielder, but certainly I think Saya is solid and it has room to improve.
How much more creative do you kind of need to be now to look to improve the lineup, the offense in general?
Yeah, always. I think we're looking to be creative, find if we can find value on the margins to be able to do that. But yeah, I think that I think you're always trying to be creative, and I think there's room for it this year.
Does it feel like the position player group is largely settled and focused on pitching, or is it?
Yeah, unclear. I wouldn't say that yet. I was really pleased with how that group played the second half of the season. I thought our offense was good. Our defense was good considering the wind. I thought we produced well. Obviously, we went for a long stretch of not producing, but I felt like things settled out a bit more. Pete started, played better in the second half. We solidified the third base position. Some of the other guys played better. So I felt like it was a productive group in the second half, but certainly looking to improve.
Hey, Lawrence, they were 8th in MLB in OPS in the second half. That's pretty good. 6th in the National League in OPS in the second half, especially considering the wind.
The wind.
Why do you have to drop in the wind? Just say that you were happy with the second half. You can make that case. You don't need to tell us the wind was an issue.
I had asked Ian Happ about how the ballpark was playing a lot, so it is good to get confirmation that it was playing differently than most people expected. I've already heard Jed Hoyer talk about it too much. Already. And I don't want to hear it anymore. I want him to get back to, building a big boy baseball team. I want it to feel like what it felt like when the Cubs hired Craig Counsell. It hasn't felt big time since then. And now you're talking about the wind. I don't want to hear it.
Hey, man, they were going against the wind. See an old team running
against the wind.
Yeah. I listen to the wind and it falls far
great
below.
Song.
Thank you, Les. For God's sakes, thank you. How would you feel? What if I told you that they were going to give a 31-year-old left-hander who has a 6-pitch mix and gets a lot of ground balls and some strikeouts and has been really, really good for an excellent franchise for multiple years, that it had some John Lester vibes to it without the World Series dominance that he was lucky to have? But what if I told you Max Fried is going to be here for
5-160?
Five at 160, something like that. They sign a $150 million pitcher for multiple years. Yes, it gives you three lefties with Shota and with Justin Steele at the top of your rotation. But I actually like that better than Corbin Burns, whose velocity has gone down steadily over the last 5 years, and his swing and miss has gone down steadily over the last 5 years. But Burns feels more ace-like, obviously. And it was terrific in Baltimore, but I think Fried is going to age really, really well.
Yeah,
so I like that idea.
You've built a team that is very strong defensively on your infield.
Yep.
So if you have a guy that is throwing a lot of ground balls, that plays into the hands of Nico Hoerner. Wait a minute. Speaking of hands and Nico Hoerner, we don't know if Nico Hoerner is even going to be ready for the beginning of spring training. And told us that when he was on the show earlier in the week.
Then you got options. Matt Shaw could break camp with the team, or James Triantos could break camp with the team, or Bellinger could play first, and Michael Bush can play some second. Put Saya back out on right, or you put Owen Casey in right, who's got a chance to break camp with the team. Some of these kids are going to matter from the get-go.
Saya, by the way, DH 59 games last year.
Yeah.
So, and he didn't. Let me go look at the splits here to see what he did.
That's his best position. And I think the offense is better and the defense is better when Saya is your full-time DH. I don't like trusting him out there in right field. I don't like it anymore.
Slash line?
Yeah.
As a DH, 298, 386, 461, 846 in 262 at-bats.
Yep.
So you don't have to worry about, like, some guys need to play the field to – to be engaged offensively. It doesn't seem like he's one of those dudes, and you're making your defense better by taking him out of the field.
Yeah,
because you're not going to put him in left, because that's where you ideally would put Saya. I think he'd be a fine left fielder. He's not a good right fielder.
Yeah, Ian Happ is up there with, like, the greatest Cubs defensive players of all time in terms of multiple gold gloves. Like, he's behind Sandberg and Grace and Maddox. I think that might be it in terms of multiple gold gloves with his three in a row. It's some vaunted company in the history of the franchise. But yeah, I think barring a big time trade for a superstar, Vlad Guerrero Jr., and we'll have time to talk about that. But hopefully some conversations get going here at the GM meetings. But I share your disappointment at the shift away from scouts. I share your disappointment about that.
Why don't we live in a little bit of musical joy?
Let's do it, man. Absolute legend, absolute icon, and a Chicago treasure. And it's a pretty amazing American life. And you got to figure out if there's a sports comp for a life like this that we need to talk about. We'll do it next on Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.